everyone, to another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris. This is the show where we focus exclusively on buy and hold real estate investing, how to build legacy wealth for you and your family, one property at a time, or heck, maybe you're one of those guys that buys five at a time. A lot of people have a lot to learn from our guests, and I am thrilled to have a great guest on the show today who just, I think, really just got started in real estate investing not too long ago and is an international buyer. Now, I get these questions from international folks all the time who would like to buy properties, but have some questions about, well, how do I do it? You know, I'm living overseas. And we've heard from some different guests who live in the United States, even as far as Hawaii. So we're going to head down to New Zealand today, where I think it is winter right now. And our guest is Kevin Estey. Nice to have you on the show, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Clayton. It's good to be on. Quite an honor.
So it is winter down there, is it not?
It is winter, and we've been having a real harsh one. It doesn't get snowy here, but we've been having nonstop rain probably for the last, and it's icy rain for the last 7 days or so. We actually even discovered a recent leak in our house, which is, it's not the greatest of things to discover, but you know.
Wow. Yeah, I have a buddy of mine who lives on the South Island. What island do you live on?
Live on the North Island, but it's the southern tip. We live in Wellington, which is the capital, and it is, you know, proudly the windiest city in the world, apparently, according to statistics.
Really? So yeah. It makes flying into that area pretty fun then, I would think.
Yeah, if anyone ever wants to watch some entertaining YouTube videos, just look up Wellington Airport landings.
we'll put that in the show notes. That's great. And I also, you know, I love New Zealand. That's actually the trip to New Zealand was the trip that started my real estate investing career, actually. I mean, or I should say buy and hold career. You know, my trip to the South Island to visit my friend who lived there, as I've told the story on the podcast, and discovering the power of buy and hold real estate on my trip to New Zealand. One of the things I learned about New Zealand, there's no natural predators on that island, on New Zealand, right? So animals can just basically run amok. Birds can just like walk on the ground. They're fine. They don't have to worry about crazy predators.
I think some of the stories about New Zealand are a little bit sort of fairy tale-ish just because we're so far away. I think by nature, there's no natural predators here, but humans have done a really good job of introducing predators, not the least of which themselves. But there's a lot of pest control that they've put in place, and the pest control often has turned into a pest itself.
Right.
So they had introduced rats at one point to deal, or I don't know if it was rats, but some rodent to deal with another problem. And then that became a problem. Now they've introduced possums to deal with the other rodent problem that they had created. Now there's a possum problem. So they actually suggest when you're driving on the roads in New Zealand, if you see a possum, aim for it.
Really?
Yeah. Because the skins are really soft, apparently.
It's a public service announcement. Yeah, hit those possums. I'd like to see some signs. Well, this isn't the animal show. This is the investing in real estate show. So as much as I'd love to talk about crazy animals from New Zealand, we got to talk about real estate investing. And I'd love to hear how you got started. I think you're a U.S. citizen to start, right? And then moving to New Zealand, did I get that right?
That's correct. Yeah, I was born, raised in San Diego, California, went to school at USC and then moved to New York, and then eventually moved out here for work about 10 years ago, which was meant to be a one-year contract, and it turned into pretty permanent, at least for the time being. So
that's great. So you get to go back and forth to the United States quite a bit then, I imagine.
I do. Yeah, I still have family there, and my wife has family in Korea, so we do, you know, pop around a lot. But most of my year is spent here, and I've been here long enough that now I've got the dual citizenship thing going on.
Good. So how did you get started in real estate investing?
I guess I sort of eased into it a bit. I mean, the first sort of experience was the fact that my wife had an apartment in New York that she owned. And when I had moved out here for my quote unquote 1 year contract that turned into 2 and 3 years, finally she moved out as well, left the apartment. We started renting it out. And so that became our first actual investment, which had originally been a primary residence. And I realized, oh, wow, you can make money off of these things because the cash flow from that was really good on a monthly basis. I think the next step was I had been looking into it a lot. I'd read, you know, the typical books, the you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad and stuff like that, that sort of inspired me. But I never was particularly hot on it as a form of investment because I just didn't know how to explore it as an avenue. And it was, but I really wanted to eventually get into it. It was just that idea of cracking the surface on it. And it was actually listening to a podcast at the beginning of this year with none other than Clayton Morris as the guest, where you were talking about the building legacy wealth and the freedom number and things like that. And actually the accessibility of real estate investing, buy and hold real estate investing is not as inaccessible as possible. That was my son. He says hi.
See what I love? Many of our guests, you can always hear the kids in the background. That's what I love, because, you know, real estate investors, you get to say that real. I say that's a real estate investor problem where you just have kids that pop into your home office when you're doing some work. Like, that's a good problem to have, right?
Yeah. Well, my son actually sits next to me in the mornings because I get up pretty early and I invest in the States and the time difference. He sits next to me with a chalk laptop that he can draw on while I'm on my real laptop. So, and now he's under the table playing with the family safe. So
that's great. Wow. You got it all right there in front of you. So, so when you started to realize the power of buy and hold investing, and buy and hold real estate, and you started to look at and analyze, take us through, you know, I've had this question from some listeners. Obviously, if you've downloaded the Freedom Cheat Sheet, I hope that it's been powerful for you. I hope that's been powerful for the audience as well. And we'll have links to that in the show notes. I'd love to hear your journey when you went through the Freedom Cheat Sheet and how you began to map out how many houses it would take to cover your monthly expenses. Take me through that process for you.
Yeah. Well, I sort of used, you know, since we earn income in New Zealand, I was looking at the income in the States as how, if we were to take, say, the amount of equity that we had in the apartment in New York and apply that to, you know, the rentals that you had talked about, what sort of a return on investment would we get? And this is, you know, considering the fact that if we could sell at full price and not, you know, get capital gains tax and all of that. But I discovered that the return on investment currently, if I were to take the full equity value of the place in New York, is only about 1.5-2%. But if I was to somehow get that full value over to, you know, the type of investments that you have available, I would be getting, you know, probably on a monthly basis, 5 to 6 times the amount, for the same, you know, amount of equity. And to me, that was shocking. And I thought, okay, I think maybe it's time to start moving over to this type of investing and actually being more active about it. And so then I approached you and talked to you and just dove right in and bought our first place with the intention of buying more as we look to sell the apartment in New York, which is still, you know, in process. But in the meantime, actually on your suggestion, we've gotten a home equity line of credit that we're actually almost close to finalizing that we're going to use from the apartment to purchase even more properties.
That's great. That's great. So tell me about the first property. What did that look like to you and what's been your experience so far?
It has been incredibly painless, almost scarily so, but in a good way, because when I sort of suggested that I wanted to get involved to you, you sent me a few emails of some suggested properties. I had a look through them, and I remember there was actually one we decided upon, and then something had happened with it, and then we switched to another one. But, you know, the numbers were virtually the same. You know, it's exactly like you say. This is the sort of price range you're looking at. This is the sort of range of return on value you're looking at. And so then I signed a few pieces of paper, which at the time I didn't understand, but I've come to understand much better.
Yeah, it's just a very simple process as you kind of go through and you know, finding the property and then just start, you know, try to keep it to a simple, painless 3-step process on our side. But yeah, to get it up and running. What type of house was it?
If I remember correctly, it was a 2-bedroom, 1-bath or 3-bedroom, 1-bath? It was quite a tiny one. And it was, there was two options that we had been presented with, was either buying it turnkey or buying it and then actually paying for the rehab and watching that. And I think to me, it was more interesting to actually watch the process of fixing up the old place, even though from afar, but to sort of see making something old into something new and something livable. And so I went down that road, and I remember asking you for some photos of it, the process, just so we could see it. But to be totally honest, that even seemed more involved than it would seem maybe some people are. It was so automated. I couldn't get over it. And then next thing I knew, you know, paying attention to other things, all of a sudden I hear, oh, okay, your place is done. It's got a renter in place. And then you asked me for a bank account number, and the money just started coming into the bank account. You know, it's incredible. Like, it, you know, when you spelled it out as that, I thought, okay, but you know, you always hear about these headaches of investing in real estate, and you've talked about them a lot in I've heard various of your podcasts, but a lot of them are, I don't know. I wouldn't say they're misnomers. They're certainly based on a reality, but like you've said, if it's done the right way, it doesn't have to be that way. And this is proof in the pudding.
Right. A good friend of mine has often said that there's nothing difficult about real estate investing. They're only difficult real estate investors. So, you know,
I know that friend, I believe.
Yeah. And you can make, you know, you can make it as easy or as difficult as you want. Right. You know, there's an interesting book, and it's a total sidebar, but you know, you and I are friends now of going through this real estate journey over the past few months. And that's one of the great things. You know, I love working with our clients because we become friends. I'd like to hear what your goals are and your ambitions are in real estate. So to be able to have those conversations. But my wife and I have been reading, we actually listened to a separate podcast and totally separate from real estate. But you know, Natalie here on the show, it's a podcast called The Cosmos in You, and our friend Susanna Scully hosts it. And it's really about empowerment. And she talks to a lot of really interesting people. She had an interesting guest who's a physicist. And he talks about how really when you build and like shape your reality, that reality, our current sort of state of things is really, we sort of create our own reality just based on the programming we place in our brains. And he says it's really like we're living in a simulation. And he said they actually have studied it now at the molecular level. They actually can do this at the quantum level and shape the reality of particles where they act completely differently just based on the sort of programming, even though there's no new limitations placed on that. So when you really believe that you're capable of creating wealth or you are capable of achieving certain things, it becomes a reality.
Yeah.
And if you live in the sort of fear-based way of thinking, then you create these limits and you want it, you add, you know, hundreds of questions on top, and it's all fear talking. It's not really questions that you're asking.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's amazing. You mentioned that because I just had a conversation with someone yesterday about that idea of once you open yourself up to a particular mindset and opportunity, then other things just start happening. Like, I mean, our mutual friend, you know, Tom Kroll kind of talks a lot about that idea of just keep taking steps every day. You know, don't, you know, stand back and try to analyze and get, you know, that whole typical analysis paralysis thing. But once you start, and so that's what I was inspired to do this year a lot, you know, a lot in part by you, is to just start taking those steps. And the first step was, you know, buying that property with you. And the amazing thing is once I started doing it and realizing, oh, this ain't so bad. Oh my gosh, this is actually really cool. Shockingly easy. Then it's opened up my eyes to so many new things. Like I, you know, now I've gotten into the wholesaling that you do. And now we're not only am I a client of yours, but we also are, you know, tribe members of this group that we're in. And, you know, it's amazing the network that's come out of it. And now I'm, you know, I find myself doing things I never would have imagined 6 months ago. I'm now investing in doing my own fix and flips here in New Zealand as well. And, looking at investing in a restaurant, and it's just all the things that I have always wanted to do. It's now like the floodgates are open, and it totally speaks to what you're saying. That idea of once you know, embrace that new programming. And sometimes the only way to do that is simply just by doing, by taking those steps and stop thinking about it, take some action. Then it's amazing what happens.
Yeah, it really is. My wife and I, we just were speaking at a conference. We had a speaking engagement in Orlando the past few days. And we were speaking about – Natalie was specifically speaking about wealth consciousness, was talking about empowerment. But this idea of wealth consciousness, it's like, you know, well, what are you worth? And when you, I grew up with all these limiting beliefs around money and, you know, we're not the Rockefellers and money doesn't grow on trees. And so if you have those frameworks in your brain, then you're never going to achieve wealth. You're never going to take those steps that you took, right? And you're investing from New Zealand. You're making things happen in the United States. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah. And one thing about that, because when I was inspired by what you were doing, I wanted to know if I could do not only the buy and hold, but the wholesaling, but, you know, the whole lot from out here. And that was a big question mark. And so I needed to prove it. But what I've found in that process and in discovering how it's possible is, not only having, goals set to just want to make it happen and you know, really pushing hard, because it's not easy. It's a lot of hard work. But more importantly than that is people. And that's one huge thing that I've discovered about the real estate investing world is, you know, we're dealing with houses and properties and things like that. But at the end of the day, the most valuable thing that I've gained and that I need every day is people. And I've created this network, incredible network of very close friends, many of which I still haven't even met in person. But we are there for each other and helping each other build wealth, you know, in every way possible. And it's really a wonderful feeling.
That's amazing. So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show today, apart from hearing about, you know, your journey and taking those first steps. So how many properties do you have now? How many rental properties do you have now?
We still have the New York one. We've got one, the one with you in Indiana, and I'm actually looking to purchase some more there. I'm looking actually into purchasing one in the Carolinas currently, which is kind of similar numbers to what you do. It's a bit of a different angle, but I just, you know, I'm interested in exploring. And then that's it for buy and hold currently. We don't have any buy and holds in New Zealand at the moment, but that may start changing. And then as far as the other side, there's, you know, I have a wholesaling business that I'm setting up I've been doing for quite some time, and now it's expanding. And that's virtual. That's in Texas.
Wow.
And then we opened a company here that we're now going to start regularly doing monthly fix and flips here in New Zealand. Cause I wanted to actually been doing so much of this investing virtually. We wanted to get involved. My wife and I wanted to get involved in it, you know, to actually do something tangible.
Right.
We finally found a group here that does it, and they network with each other and leverage each other and do JVs, and it's awesome. Like, we actually just looked at a bunch of houses yesterday, and one of them we're putting offers in on. So it's like there's so much out there. You just have to start diving in to see what there is, and you know, stop reading blog posts and dreaming about it and start doing it.
Right. Yeah. When you start to read, you know, there's a certain point at which you start to talk yourself out of anything. You know, you can, it's like, oh, I want to start this new workout. And then you could keep reading. And then you could start to read just some like negative comments about that particular workout. And then that could be the thing that just totally derails you. You know, 90% of the people have had success, but then there's like a few people who probably did something wrong, or maybe they had just like one bad experience, and you're letting that color your entire, you know, your entire vision for taking action. I wanted to ask you though, as you're in New Zealand, we have a lot of clients and listeners and so forth who are, whether they're in Canada or they're in Europe or they're in New Zealand or Australia, who are thinking about investing in the United States. Now, obviously, you're in a unique situation because you're a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. But what sorts of things did you have to put in place, like an LLC or financially a bank account? What did you have to do to make it easier for you to invest in the United States?
Like you said, I think it gave me a leg up, obviously, already having finances there. And I've spoken to other actual New Zealanders who invest in the States who aren't citizens in the United States. And it's a bit of difficulty there for them. But for me, I already had a bank that I worked with, and I just looked into opening up a business account with them. And then I had never opened a company before. And I just asked you, how do I do that? And you almost freakishly nonchalantly said, oh, just, you know, sign up with the state or something like that.
And Department of State's website. Well, so many people waste money on all these services. They're like, oh, I'm going to hire a lawyer for, I mean, I like lawyers, but that's fine. But, you know, or I'm going to use like LegalZoom or these other services, and you're going to like pay hundreds of dollars more. Than if you just go through the Department of State's website in the state that you're investing, it's very simple. You know, that's how they're going to do it. They're going to go to the Department of State's website and do it right there also.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was amazing because, you know, when you finally pointed me in the right direction, because I had to even ask him, I was like, what is the state's website?
Right.
And then you showed me, I did it. And I mean, it was, I don't even know how much it cost, but it wasn't really anything as far as an expense, probably less than $100. And, and I realized, oh my God, I just started a company. And you know, that was that first step, you know, in realizing how all this scary stuff is not so scary after all. And now I actually have four companies, two in the US, two in New Zealand. And, you know, it's amazing the snowball effect of this stuff.
What about taxes? Have you had discussions with your tax accountant or anything like that, how to bring some of that money back home? Or what are your sort of plans for how you then tap into that profit?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different angles, at least for the buy and hold right now. My hope is to just put everything that it earns back into purchasing more buy and holds and, of course, covering any expenses that come up. So I want to keep that self-contained for the time being, but I want to build enough of it so that eventually it's producing enough cash flow that we could use that to live off of. Because my dream is for... you know, our collective dream as a family is when my son gets to, you know, maybe the age of 10 or 11, which is still about 5 years off. We want to travel the world for a whole year and live in a different place every couple weeks or, you know, and not have to worry about how to make money during that year off. So this is the start in setting that up, you know, funding that whole trip. And it's not funding it in a way where we've got a big pile of money that we then blow through during the year. It's funding it in a way that once we unplug, the money keeps coming in.
All right. I'm going to dive in a little bit more into that because that's the stuff I'm talking about. On one of my past episodes, I was talking about the idea of creating your legacy, right? And turning that freedom number into your legacy wealth. And it's a harder thing to really quantify. It's harder to really map out. Because what you're asking yourself to do is really to kind of think big, right? And kind of to be imaginative. Just, you know, really picture yourself as like the best version of yourself and your family. And, you know, take that really big step. And for a lot of us, I think we shortchange that. We're like, well, we don't have to go for a year, you know, travel the world. Maybe we just go for like a month. That's fine.
Yeah.
But no, you really want to go for a year. So make it happen.
Yeah,
and you start to put those pieces in place. So what did that look for you? Like what kind of passive income would you need to hit or how many houses do you think you'd need to hit in order to make that happen?
I mean, I think my wife and I, I have big, big, lofty aspirations, but I think at a bare minimum, you know, looking at our spending, I'd have to go back and do the math. But if we had... I think it was about 25 to 30 properties I figured would be far more than enough for us to, you know, be able to travel the world and fully fund that. Because when we're traveling, we wouldn't be looking for really posh accommodation and things like that. We'd be looking for livable standard accommodation and it wouldn't be a holiday. It would be living in each location and trying to really get a sense of what it's like to be a member of that particular culture and society. And because that's the experience we want for our son. And so I think I'd have to go check the numbers on it again, but it was not a surprisingly large number. And especially with the cost of these sorts of properties being as low as they are. And if you can finance them and it makes it so attainable when you really lay it out that it's almost a no-brainer to start taking action to do it. Because the longer you wait, the harder it will be to implement that.
Right. Because what are the risks? You know, what are the downsides? It's okay. Maybe you have even though you screen for tenants, you have great tenants in the properties who don't have evictions or criminal histories or any of that stuff. But yeah, what if you get a bad apple, right? What if you get a bad tenant and you got 15 properties? Okay. Well, then it's a business, right? Then you've got to handle that. You've got to then take care of that tenant. You've got to go through maybe an eviction process if you have to. And where we buy our properties, it can happen very fast. Like I live in New Jersey where it can take, you know, 9 months to get an eviction. where I buy my rental properties, it can take a month, you know, or less. So other benefits of buying in certain areas. But yeah, I mean, to me, when people ask me this question all the time, and I'll ask it of you now, people say, well, what are the risks of real estate investing? What are the risks of buy and hold real estate investing? Because for a lot of people, it's they're used to the stock market. They're used to like a 401k, but they're not used to, okay, I'm going to actually buy a piece of property. Someone's going to pay me to live in it, and I'm going to make money off of that property. It seems like, wow, that's a big thing to do. And I know it is. I mean, I know it was when I first took my first steps in it. But what are the risks to you? What did you see as risks before you took action?
Well, actually, before I even get into what the actual risks are, I think it would be a good point to note. Hey, Clayton, you know how the whole Brexit thing just happened? What happened to your rental income when Brexit hit?
Right. Nothing.
Did exactly.
Right.
But what happened to the stock market?
Yeah. I mean, people literally money. This is what my wife was speaking about the other day when we had the speech, is that a lot of the money is fake money to begin with in the stock market or in banks.
It's an emotional gauge. That's what they say the stock market is. It's a gauge on emotion.
Right.
It's reactionary.
And if you actually understand like fractional banking or was it fractional investing, like a lot of the banks, when you deposit $100 in the bank does not keep that $100 in the bank. The bank is allowed to lend out they're allowed to lend out $90.
Right.
That means they only have to keep 10. And so we can't do that, right? But banks can. And so a lot of this money ends up being sort of fake money, like just visualized fake money. And so when things like the Brexit happen, which I don't totally – I don't understand it at all. Like I don't understand how my 401k can take a huge plummet in one afternoon.
Yeah.
But yet my rental income's fine. Didn't move. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and to speak to what the actual risks are, what I foresaw the risks being going into, real estate investing, particularly buy and hold, honestly, it's the things that you hear from other people. And the things that you always hear are, well, what if it can't rent?
Right.
Or what if you get a call, what if you get calls every week about the plumbing breaking in the middle of the night? Or, all those sorts of typical stories. And my thought to that was, well, what if? I mean, what if it doesn't rent? You then find another renter. Maybe it doesn't rent for a few months. Or what if you do get a call in the middle of the night about plumbing? And my thought is always going to hire someone else to deal with it, because don't they have people that can do that? Like, why does the renter even have your number in the first place?
Why do they even know your home number? They should be calling a property management company. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the reality of it is exactly the opposite, at least in my experience. And especially with the properties, the way you've set it up is because you understand that as an investor, we don't want to deal with that stuff. We just want, to not put it this sort of simply, but essentially we want to put our money in the vending machine and get the toys out, and that's it, and walk away.
Right.
And the toys being our return on the investment. And of course, you can be in it as involved as you want. And I think some of the investing that I do, I want to be involved, like the rehabbing that we're doing here, because that's an enjoyable aspect of it. But there's ways to even do that and not be involved. So it's really up to you as the investor to kind of make that decision and choose how you invest the money. Do it wisely, but realize that all the fear mongering over how it's troublesome or too much or not worth it because it's too much trouble is, it's that same old fear,
Right. Just creeping back up again. Well, Kevin, it's been such a real treat to have you here on the show. What's next for you guys? I mean, obviously, you're putting the pieces in place to make this year-long trip with the family. I'd love to hear that journey as it unfolds. And heck, I'd love to be able to interview you after that journey or just as you're about to set out on that journey as sort of a follow-up. But what's next for you right now?
There's a lot of things, to be honest. Right now, I got an email actually this morning about our home equity line of credit, which we've been working on for a long time, being just on the finish line. So if that comes through, you'll be getting a call from me and we'll be buying some more properties right away.
Great.
Because that's where that money's headed. But then the other thing is, maybe this is a conversation for another day, but the wholesaling business that you've inspired me to get involved in is now taking the leap to a full 4-person team. And just this week, I've put them in place and set them loose with something that I've been manning myself from New Zealand for 6 months. And it's been crazy, to say the least. But the moment I leveraged other people and took myself out as the bottleneck, it's amazing what's been happening just even the last week. Like the amount of action is incredible. And so that's kind of next for me, is watching and managing that from a little bit higher up. And then of course, starting to actually do our own, fixing and flipping here in New Zealand. And then the last sort of thing, at least in the target on this year, is if this wholesaling proves successful and lucrative in the long run, once we've now implemented this system, is to travel to my market, which is Austin, Texas, and actually finally meet my team for the first time that I've been working with from out here. So it would be a business trip, and then hopefully maybe come to New York and meet you, because my wife and I originally met and got married in New York, and I'd love to come and say hi to you and give you a big thank you as well for all that you've inspired.
Well, dinner's on us. That would be a blast. I would love to meet you and the family. That would be wonderful. And congratulations. I mean, this is just amazing. I remember our first conversation just a few months ago, and it's just remarkable to see what has happened. And I want our audience, to just really take away and just sort of – I want you to say, take a deep breath, close your eyes, and sort of picture this, because Kevin, from New Zealand – was able to start doing this. He's doing wholesale investing. He's doing buy and hold investing. He's starting to do fix and flips in New Zealand. And he's doing this all with the help of other people. And that's, nothing happens in a vacuum. You need the help of other people. I think that's such a valuable lesson. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's been a real honor and real treat.
Yeah, this has been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. Now I have to, unfortunately, go to real work, and I really don't want to be honest.
That's the benefit of the time zone. It's the end of my day and the beginning of yours.
Yeah, but right. Hey, it's my Friday, so I get the weekend earlier.
Right. You guys are – I always was amazed by that. You guys are a day ahead. It's like you guys are in the future somehow.
The future. I'll tell you what happens tomorrow, Clayton, but might be worried.
I love it. Kevin, thanks so much. And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing to the show. As you'll notice this week, we are on the front page of iTunes. So Apple has chosen us to be featured as one of their top podcasts. So thank you so much. We've crossed over, the 150,000 download mark in a few short months here. So yes, thank you so much for everyone and all of your kind 5-star reviews in iTunes. It's meant the world to me. And I'm hoping we're bringing as much value to you as possible with interviews with the likes of Kevin here. So go down and download. If you go to morrisinvest.com/podcast, that is the show notes page. We will have links to all of the things that we were talking about on today's show, wealth consciousness. We even got a little esoteric today. So we'll have links to some books there on wealth consciousness, as well as the Freedom Cheat Sheet and some of the other things that Kevin and I were talking about. We'll see you back here next time, everyone, with another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Much love to you all.